As soon as you say that you're looking to build a portfolio, people want to align themselves up with you. That happens with time. Like once you do one or two and you show trust and you show that you're serious by flying out there and meeting them in person, these things just click into place.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon, and I've got Derek Clifford on the pod today. Super interesting episode. He's actually recording this from Japan. Him and his wife have stayed in over 50 Airbnbs since he left his corporate W-2 job in September of 2021. We dig into his journey from W-2 to full-time real estate investor, started out in the single family space, investing out of state. We talk about one of his first multifamily deals that turned out to be a nightmare, at least for the first year, and then the rest of his journey. We also dig into a little bit of his 3 degrees of financial freedom, or 3 degrees of freedom, time, location, and financial. So let's get Derek on the pod. Derek, man, how are you? Great to have you on the podcast.
Hey, Justin, it is great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Well, let's get started here. Maybe give everybody an intro, who you are, what you're doing, and then we'll unpack some stuff.
Yeah, sure. I'll try to keep this as brief as I can, but basically trained up as an engineer after I graduated from school and then transitioned over into project management for my full-time W-2 job. And at some point during that transition, my wife and I, we were looking for ways to create passive income or ways to create some reliable income on the side that didn't rely on me having to be on my full-time job and creating active income all the time. So right. We did it the Dave Ramsey way, right? Like we were trying to pay off all of our debt and everything.
Got it.
And eventually found out that that was going to take way, way too long for me to be able to reap any of the benefits of that. And then accidentally fell into real estate investing through my wife's old primary residence, a condo up in Washington State. And then started buying single families. Like we were buying, since we were living in the California Bay Area, we had our unfair advantage be our high salaries in the Bay Area. And so we were buying like one or two properties every month in the Bay Area out in Indianapolis in the Midwest.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And as we were buying these properties, eventually we started running out of loans and then went into doing some JVs with some of our partners and then bought our first multifamily out there, which ended up being an absolute nightmare, very hard to deal with. And it took us about a year to get that thing close to stabilized. And then after that, started realizing I was running out of capital of my own to be able to do JVs. Then I sought a mentor out to do syndications. And fast forward another couple of years, and now we're up to over 450 units across 3 markets in the United States. But the coolest thing though, Justin, is that I left my full-time job in September of 2021, I believe. And since then, my wife and I have lived in 50 different Airbnbs since then. And right now, wow, I'm actually talking to you from Japan because basically live wherever our Airbnb is, because we sold our house and we took our money and proceeds from a primary residence to invest in JVs and syndications on our own, and found out that you can do a lot of living in a lot of places around the world for a lot cheaper than in San Francisco in the Bay Area. And we were able to achieve location freedom, which then led to financial freedom because we had a certain level of passive income. And then we are working on our time freedom right now, which means using systems and processes to basically allow us to enjoy the surroundings that we're in. So we'd like to talk about the 3 degrees of freedom, which is location, time, and financial freedom, and how all of those are related to each other. And we're very lucky to be able to live this life that we lived. So anyway, I know it was a long intro, but I wanted to make sure I hit all the points there for you.
Well, no, that's helpful. I mean, a lot to unpack there, but I guess we're recording this June 14th of 2023. Is it the 14th or 15th where you are? Because you're in Japan.
It's the 15th at 6 a.m.
Got it. So what does the future hold? What can we expect?
Yeah, well, honestly, I think I've been in Japan with my wife for about 2.5 months now. So in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be heading back to the United States, and then we'll continue to be based in Austin for a little bit, in Austin, Texas. And then we'll be driving throughout the country, because literally all we have, Justin, is our car and six pieces of luggage. That's all we own.
You're bare bones at the moment.
That's right. And we've been doing this for about 2 years, and we love this lifestyle. We're eventually going to find a place to buy and just settle down soon again, because we've been doing this for a couple of years now. And while this is great, like, it was an adventure that we've always wanted to have, but it may be time for us to eventually start settling down again, but continuing to do these trips that allow us this location freedom and time freedom with the financial freedom that we've established, to be able to do like a trip to the summer. Like, you know, last summer we went to Europe for 4 months, right? We may do something like that also, but maybe just do it for a couple of months or for 3 months or something like that. But we always want to be able to have that aspect so we can travel anytime we want to.
No, it's awesome. Well, I live in Austin, Texas. So when you make landfall and you're here, hit me up.
Let's do it.
We'll chat. And awesome. We'd love to introduce you to my wife, because we've talked about living the by location life, summering in one area, wintering in another area, and all that stuff. Not as ambitious as your scenario where you're living in Airbnbs and out of a suitcase, which sounds exciting to me. My wife always wants a home base, but we can talk about that offline. Yeah. So let's go back to your W-2. You're sitting at the office and you said you fell into real estate via your wife's primary residence. So maybe kind of walk us through that step process of you're sitting there as a project manager, and then you're like, okay, now I'm investing in real estate. I'm buying single family houses in Indiana. So let's unpack some of that.
Yeah. So I wish that I could say that we planned everything, but you know how these things work when you're first getting started. It's like you fall into these things by accident. And I feel like that's how it happened with us. My wife had purchased her condo back in, I think it was May of 2008. So it was literally a few months before the 2008 market crash.
Right.
So she had bought the thing for somewhere around $250,000 or something like that. And at the time I hadn't known her yet, right? We ended up like getting married in 2015 and we were dating in 2012. So basically when we started dating, she had this condo and she told me that like 3 months after she had bought it, it was like worth 90K. So it went from 250K to 90K. So she had this underwater mortgage this whole time. And even when her residency was up in 2012, when we met that year, she was supposed to go down to the Bay Area in California and she wanted to sell the property. That was the whole plan, was to buy the property and then use the proceeds from the property to help pay for grad school, because she had all these student loans, right? So it didn't work out that way because the property was still underwater after 4 years in 2012. So what we had to do was we had to hold on to it because we weren't going to write a check, as I had just graduated from school. So I didn't have that much capital to be able to do. And I had student loans of my own as well.
Right.
So I figured, well, maybe what we can do is just try to hold this thing and just rent it and then see if the market continues to appreciate. And it did. And we were so lucky. And at the time, I was so focused on trying to find a way out of continuing to work for money. And Dave Ramsey was the only thing that I could find that really resonated with me, where if I had no debt, then I could leave my job early, right?
Because
you have your investments pay for things. But as we got this thing set up and I was really skeptical, we were driving down from Washington to California and we got our first deposit in from our tenants that way. And when I saw it actually hit, like, you're doing leases and you're trying to find tenants and everything, it's all kind of a blur when you first get started and you have to learn these things right away. But as we got our deposit in, I was like, oh my gosh, this covers the mortgage, this covers the HOA, this covers all the utilities. This is awesome. This is going to work.
And
my gosh, like, if we did this on accident, what would happen if we leaned into this and did it on purpose, right? Yeah. And so then I basically got my hands on everything that I could read. That was when Bigger Pockets was very, very helpful for me. Like, I was on there every single day listening to their podcast. Like, I listened to almost every single episode, probably once or twice over.
Yeah.
Got my hands on every book I could read. And pretty much the rest is history after that.
It's interesting. Bigger Pockets was like the holy grail, if you will, once we figured out that real estate was the journey that we wanted to go down. Our light bulb moment was reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that was like the mindset shift and all that fun stuff. I guess you accidentally fell into this kind of real estate investing space. And then at what point did you start to say, oh, wow, this is an alternative to what most people think about is like financial freedom or the goal, which is the normal is to work for 50 years, put your money in retirement. retirement and then hope you've got enough there when you retire to fund the rest of your life, right? So like, what was the process that you and your wife went through? Because it can be a sticky situation if one person wants to do this and invest in real estate and take your money instead of putting it into the safe stock market. I'm using air quotes for those folks listening to the pod, but putting your money into the normal 401k and the stock market. Sometimes people have different opinions on what is right and wrong. So how did you and your wife say, okay, this is the route for us? And then A, how'd you pick Indiana? And then B, walk us through that first out-of-state single family that you purchased.
Yeah. Again, I hope that this isn't a recurring theme, but man, I'm getting way too much credit for all the things that happened in my life right now at this point, because honestly, my wife is the basis of everything good that happened in my life so far. And the reason I say that is her family was very like comfortable being around entrepreneurism because they're immigrants. They came to the United States from Asia as first generation immigrants back in the 80s. And so they had to hustle and grind. And so she saw that from them. And so what you talked about before, the rich dad, poor dad, I got all of that mindset training from her, right? Yeah. Because my family was born in the US and they told me just to go get a job and basically be the poor dad in rich dad, poor dad, right? And so once I started learning these things, once the cat's out of the bag, man, it's all over right at that point. So I would say that the mindset piece is the biggest part that I learned from her. And she has always been in favor of starting businesses rather than working a job. She's more about growth. I am actually the more fiscally conservative one. So believe it or not, I was actually saving money in my 401k and investing in Indiana at the same time. So I was doing all of these things working in the Bay Area.
Right. Your safety net. You're like, okay, let me just make sure I have the 401k there just in case
people
were right. I get that.
Yeah. And in the Bay Area, like we were trying to keep our expenses as low as possible by like living with roommates. It was really tough for a while. And eventually we graduated from that. But we like to say that that's just what happens when you start out, right? You don't have much capital to work with if you're working with just you and just your own income. So that's what we had to do. We made it work that way. So as far as like why real estate investing, it's just that it was that aha light bulb moment that we had when we were driving from Washington State down to California. It's like we could totally get passive income and the value of the property will grow. And then as I learned more, it's like there's tax benefits here.
Right.
There's options to refinance. This can turn into a business. I just saw too many things that made me realize this was a no-brainer, right? Like we just had to make the time and energy to make this happen. And so in talking with my wife, like her parents also had rental properties. So that made me more and more comfortable with this situation of trying to buy. And then the last part of it is why Indiana? Well, again, don't want to make this a theme, but I don't deserve all the credit here because we were going to local meetups, local RIA meetings.
Yeah.
And we were finding that there were people who were using their primary residence in the Bay Area as a bank. And what they would do, Justin, is they would get a line of credit on their big California house, right? Because California prices go up and down so much. They get a line of credit for like $300,000 or $400,000 or more than that, right? And they'll take that cash and they'll throw it into the Midwest markets. It was Kansas City, Columbus, Cleveland, and Indianapolis. Those were the four markets that I kept hearing over and over again in these RIA meetups.
Yeah.
They were taking their money and paying cash for these houses in the Midwest. And then the rental income from those houses would pay off the HELOC along with their income. And then after you pay the first one off, now you have a full paid for with no loan house, right? That's completely just cash flowing. And then you can buy the second one and then pay the second one down even faster because you have income from two houses and your income, right? And so these people would use their HELOC at really low rates at like 3% or 2.5% loan.
Which you're paying to yourself.
Exactly. And so we got super inspired by that strategy. I ended up getting a house that lasted that long in the Bay Area. We did end up buying a house, but we never used that method. We just paid for it in cash because the properties were so cheap over there. I mean, we bought like five houses for, I think, $200,000 or something like that in a bundle of five back in 2018. And then those houses eventually appreciated to be $100,000 a piece. And we used that as a 1031 basis for us to buy our first apartment building. So just lots of really cool things happened once we made it happen. But I will say that it took time, right? Like we started back 5-6 years ago. And as long as you stick with it, these are the amazing things that can happen.
Yeah, no, I want to dig into your next adventure, which sounds like was a nightmare with your first multifamily spot. But we're going to take a quick sponsor break. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help.
Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Derek. So before the break, we talked a little bit about your journey to this point. You fell backwards into real estate investing. Your wife was coming from more of an entrepreneurial family. You are more of the conservative person. Then you started to invest out of state, which has its own challenges in and of itself, right? Because you can't just drive by the property and make sure it's still standing. You have to rely on maybe property managers or systems or processes. So I want to jump into your nightmare first multifamily deal. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you just about what processes or how you manage those properties out of state. Because we have a property actually in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which we live in Austin. And when we bought it, we lived in Philly, which wasn't technically out of state, but still 4 or 5 hours away. But we underwrote it so that it had enough juice in it to afford a property manager, right? So they professionally manage it. They deal with all the tenants and all the issues. And then we just, the 15th of every month, you get a little deposit in your account and you're like, oh, that was fun, right? So how did you handle it with your Indiana properties?
Yeah, great question. So what I did was I always, in the Midwest, there's always room for a property manager. You just have to. That's just a given.
Yeah.
So we made sure that there was plenty of room. We had conservative underwriting. So that's the other piece. During the acquisition process, we only invested with people that we had met beforehand. So before we even bought any property at all, we flew out to Indy and basically packed an entire week's full schedule of us talking with property managers, talking with contractors, talking with agents, right? Trying to build a team out there to be able to say, look, guys, here's our vision. We have one property already and we have cash in the bank. We're looking to buy things. And as soon as you say that, right, that you're looking to build a portfolio, people want to align themselves up with you. So where that desire comes from, I'm bringing this up because our property manager went above and beyond for us because when we were getting started and buying one property every month or so, right? Imagine what it's like from the perspective of a property manager. Like, this is awesome, right?
Right. Because they get revenue every time you buy a property because they're going to manage it and there's fees.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So once we had like one or two properties, they were willing to like drive by and investigate for me and pull the rents and help me with the underwriting and do all of that. So again, that happens with time. Like once you do one or two and you show trust and you show that you're serious by flying out there and meeting them in person, these things just click into place. And I think you understand what I mean. And so does the audience right now at this point. But what is important is that you show that you're very serious from the beginning by making that initial outreach, right? And flying to your market, studying up, like instead of spending time driving around the city and like eating in downtown and going like that, you need to spend your time talking with people. Don't drive for dollars in a market that you don't live in, because that's pointless. Because the people that will end up getting you the property, like the agents or the property managers who have available inventory to sell to you, those people know better than you. And they always will, because they live there, right? Yeah. And they're active in that market. So you should be spending your time going to these markets, talking with them and trying to build a relationship with those people. The better you can work with them, the better deals you're going to find and the easier it's going to be for them to handle things when you're not there. Like when you're in the middle of closing and there's inspections, right? Who's going to meet the inspector? Well, if you have a really good agent that knows that there's more business coming, if you close on this one, then they will be out there to meet the inspector for you. And they'll be taking pictures alongside the inspector. And then they'll upload them to Google Drive for you, right? So that's kind of where it all started for me. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. And I think the theme that I realize, and I think anybody that starts this process, is it takes a team to be successful in real estate investing. And single family, you can start out, especially if you are investing in a market that you live in or live close to, you can do it more or less yourself. But once you start to get into the multifamily space and the bigger deals, that's where you definitely need a team, whether it's property management, you deal with a lot more legal things. The lending and the loan is a lot different. So let's dig into your first multifamily deal and walk me through, how did you make that jump? Because the typical evolution is single family, small multi, then syndication and all that fun stuff. So it sounds like you took a similar journey. So how did you figure out, okay, single family is great, but let's jump into the multifamily space. And then let's hear about this nightmare first deal.
Yeah, for sure. I'll keep this as brief as possible. But basically what ended up happening was we kept buying properties like within 6 or 7 months of really going into this thing full steam. We ended up maxing out the number of loans that we could get, right? Yep. Between my wife and I. And so once we got the loans maxed out and we had like a portfolio of somewhere around 24 units or something like that, because we had a fourplex and a duplex in there, I think. Once we maxed all that out, then we came to a choice. It's like, all right, do we refinance everything in a commercial loan, right? Get like a bank to just refinance everything out and lose the amazing 30-year term, the Fannie loans that you'd get for a regular single family home or residential loan.
Yeah.
We decided no, we wanted to hold on to all that debt at the time because the interest rates were rising a little bit compared to what we had bought them for. So we're like, money is tight right now. I want to make sure that we focus our dollars that we're getting from our rental income to growing the portfolio, not consuming them. So what we ended up doing was we took some of our capital and pooled it together with 3 or 4 other people to try to find a property in Indy. And what I did with some of my colleagues at work is I'm like, look, if you guys want to start building a single family portfolio, here's my property manager, here's my agent. I want everyone to win. So I'm going to Indy on this day. If anyone wants to join me, come out with me.
Oh,
and
cool.
So there were like 4 or 5 people that went out with me because I was looking to build my multifamily community out because I had my single family community already built out. So I was going back again to start meeting new people, other investors, other agents and brokers and things like that, lenders. What ended up happening, Justin, is I tapped my single family resources to say, hey, Mr. Wholesaler, if you come across a multifamily deal, I would love to pick this up. We're really hungry for it and we want to do some work. We want to make it happen. So while we were at that trip, one of the wholesalers called me and be like, you know what? I came across this deal and I was just going to pass on it because it was something that's not in our wheelhouse, but it's an 18 unit property that is going to be sold for really cheap. Like it's $150,000 or $300,000 or something for 18 units right in the middle of downtown. This was back in like late 2018.
Okay.
And we ended up walking the property, the 4 of us, while we were there, and we got under contract before we left. And so we were moving really quick. We were like, oh my gosh, like we're actually making this happen. And then just to give you a little bit of like why this was a nightmare property. So it was a complete reposition. Like we were turning all of the units. There were like police issues, crime problems, like there were drugs being done. This was a D property in B area, right?
Got it.
So the B area aspect is great, but man, it was just really tough. And we dealt with a lot of things. Like one of my partners flew out to Indy and fired my property manager without telling me. So we had no property management there at a point in time. We had contractors that were out there that were sending us progress pictures of other units, right? That they were working on across town and we were sending them money and they were like saying, yeah, look, the unit's done. And then we had our property manager go and he's like, this unit isn't done at all.
Then
disappeared. So we had things stolen from us. We had partner issues. We had bank problems. Like we ran out of capital to do the turns. Like you name it, we made every mistake in the book possible with this property. But the good thing is that it's in an opportunity zone. So we'll be able to sell this thing in the next couple of years in 2028 without any taxes at all.
Oh, got it.
So that's going to be really, really great. But man, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears on that property. I don't want to spend too much more time on it, but I think you get the picture
what
that type of property is like.
Yeah, it's one of those things where sometimes it's too good to be true, right? Oh, 300 grand for an 18 unit. It's like something's wrong. And maybe the property wasn't wrong, but just again, the out-of-state hiccups that you run into because you're not able to just drive by, right?
That's right.
So there are some things that run into that. So after that first one, I guess at what point did you make that transition or think about, hey, I want to quit my W-2 to have that location freedom? And we'll dig into the 3 degrees of freedom because I'm very interested in that. But how did you make that realization that in 2021, you're like, okay, this is the date that I want to leave. And here's the income that I need, right? Because obviously there's a math problem that you got to figure out. So
yep. Well, see, that's the thing, right? This is where the mindset piece is so big because it's always been on my radar to eventually leave the full-time job. That was always the plan. But the thing was, COVID really opened things up because it allowed me to continue to work my W-2, but work from anywhere in the United States. So that's what we were doing is even while we had a house, like we were driving out to the Pacific Northwest or something, and we were working our full-time job because we were in the same time zone and there's no way they could find out about it.
Yeah, right? It didn't matter because they couldn't have you come into the office anyway.
Yes, exactly. So what we realized, and this is why we're so big about the 3 degrees of freedom, is that when we had location freedom, we have control over our expenses. And we already had passive income at a certain level, but compared to the Bay Area, right? Like for you to live in the Bay Area comfortably, at least for my wife and I's standards in the burbs and stuff like that, you need to be making about $10,000 take home. right? Yeah. Like that needs to be your take home income just to live comfortably.
That's kind of the bare minimum, I would imagine.
That's right.
Yeah.
So our passive income wasn't that high, but we were getting there, right? Like that's how much we had. And so when we realized that like we were booking Airbnbs in the Pacific Northwest, in Utah, in Nevada, in the surrounding states around California, not venturing out too far, we realized that, man, these Airbnbs and these rental properties, like even if we wanted to rent something, was so cheap that we could live for $5,000 a month very comfortably in a lot of parts of the United States. And then we started looking internationally and we were just blown away, like what you could do in Portugal, what you could do in Greece. And we were just like, oh my gosh, this location independence thing may end up being our financial independence. And that's exactly what happened. We were able to move into these situations where now, as long as we have an internet connection, as long as we set our businesses up that way so that we can do all of our jobs through the internet. And that's exactly what we've been doing anyway, right? We've been investing out of state for so long. Why not continue to do that with that approach? So now we have a sophisticated system where we bring on boots on the ground partners with our syndications, where there's someone that lives in that market and is continuously talking with the PM. And I do all the underwriting and the asset management and the investor communication and those types of things, which allows me to do everything online, right? I continue to add value to our syndications by being online and active. And so that's how the whole thing unfolded. Was first we got to our location freedom, next we got financial, and then the time freedom was the biggest piece. And since I've always been system oriented, I love integrating things and automating things. And so I've been like goofing around with Zapier and ChatGPT and all these amazing things that help stand in. And that alongside of our VA has been able to help us automate our business. So now all I spend is maybe 2 or 3 hours per day on my business, which is plenty of time to do everything we need to do. And we can enjoy all these incredible sights and sounds for wherever we are in the world at the time.
That's awesome. That's like an amazing journey to go from where you were to where you are. And you're right. The financial number changes depending on if you're in the Bay Area or if you're in Indiana, obviously, right? So like,
that's right.
You don't need to make as much, especially if you're moving out there. So where are you now? You said you're about 450 units. What kind of syndications are you doing? Where you're doing them? Catch us up to where you are present day.
Sure. Yeah. Just again, to be brief on this, we mainly focus in multifamily properties, although we may start expanding out into doing mobile home parks just because I have a strong network in that area and may start doing asset management for another group that I really respect, just because I really want to break into the space. And that's how you break into space well, right? Is you find someone that really knows what they're doing and then partner with them. We also have a fund as well that we raise capital for, and we do our own deals inside the fund just so that it makes it easier for our investors to experience. And so, yeah, right now we're focused on multifamily and we're mainly in the Midwest and South. So we're looking at Texas. We have some investments in Austin and also in San Antonio. And then we also have most of our portfolio in Indianapolis and then Louisville, Kentucky. We've been finding that like those three markets have a little bit for everyone, right? Like you have the cash flow markets in the Midwest for those who want the return right away.
Yeah.
And then we have the appreciation and a little bit of cash flow as well in some of the Texas markets as well.
And what size deals are you looking at? Are they like 100 plus or are they mid-sized?
Yeah. So before we were doing mostly midsize, like anywhere between 50 to 100 units, just because they don't have crosshairs painted on them and the competition isn't fierce with some of these hedge funds and some of these bigger groups.
Yep.
So we were finding that like if we can build a portfolio of properties that are right next to each other, which is what we ended up doing, right? Like we found multifamily properties that are right across the street from each other. We can run them together as a portfolio. And then when we sell them, we can sell them as a bigger package, right?
Yeah, you can sell them to a bigger syndicate that's going after a 200-unit property. Yeah.
That's right. Since they're run by the same property manager and have the same fixtures and everything. Yeah, it's right across the street, but you can have one office there where the property manager can just walk across the street and take care of their business and be on site, right? So that was our plan from the beginning, was to buy some of these smaller buildings and then operate them as a professionally run bigger building. And so that's been working out really well for us. And now we're targeting at least 75 units and going up to 150, but we haven't purchased anything yet because of all the uncertainty in the market. We're looking at stuff, but we're very conservative and we just want to wait until some of the Fed signals, which I believe actually came out yesterday or the day before.
They're pausing for the dilemma where they're taking a pause on raising.
So this is probably a time for us to get ready to buy, because if they pause, maybe it may go up by 25 basis points or something later on, but you can guarantee that your exit's going to have a lower exit, a lower cap rate, and probably a lower interest rate for someone else to pick up your properties. So this would be a great time to start buying. So that's where we've been over the last 6 months, but that's what we target now.
No, that's awesome. And that's actually a good transition. I was curious to get your take on the market, what you're seeing. I'm a big proponent of, if you can make a deal pencil in this market, it could be a slam dunk to the points you just made. You're likely going to refinance at a lower interest rate. And in 2 years, 3 years, cap rates could compress over the next handful of months if you're going to be able to have more people in the market buying and selling. So I think it could be a really good time to buy as well. But what are you seeing? And I guess you're active in these markets, Indiana, Kentucky, Texas. Are you thinking about expanding your searches outside of those markets, or you really like to laser in on two or three?
Yeah, for the properties that we run ourselves, we have great networks in those markets. So that's where I would like to stay if we're doing properties on our own. But this experiment with mobile home parks is going to open us up to raising capital for these people. And being in the asset management role will give me extra insight on how they operate. And so if I can see how these things are operating and the way that it works, we may have expanding and raising capital for these deals as well. Our approach is, we're starting to realize that if you're partnering with people who have the networks and have the ability to do these, then you can use the whole country as your playground.
Yep.
But you really have to build up the trust, because you're putting people's money to work, including not just your own, but other people's money. And so you got to take it very seriously there. So yeah, I think warming up to the idea of opening up outside of those markets, that's going to be our approach. And I think value add is the way to go. I'm not a fan of going in and trying to find something right now where you have to count on a cap compression. And we never underwrite cap compressions in our deals. For the listeners, it just means that you're going to sell the property for a higher cap rate or lower cap rate than when you purchased it, which means you can't do that, right? You can't make that assumption.
That's a very bullish outlook for sure.
And we also underwrite zero rental increases for the first 2 years, just because that's the way it is right now. I mean, I feel like the economy is under stress. And while we have to wait for jobs and inflation to catch up, if you can make it work with a value add strategy upfront and no rental increases for the first couple of years, but maybe in year three or so, and then a refinance in 3 years or something, then it's usually, for me, it looks like a good deal. And we're looking for a longer time horizon, maybe 5 year holds, 8 year holds, something like that. And then if you exit early, that's great. This is great news for the investors, right? If you hit the goals early. So that's what we're looking at right now and working with our investors and so forth. But I do think that we're on the way down now. I think we just passed the peak. And I think that there may be a little bit more distress coming. Maybe not, though. If not, then it'll just be a temporary pause. And then I think that multifamily is a perfect way to go, because even in a recession, people need a place to live. And
that's right.
When interest rates are high, they can't buy a property to live in. They can't buy homes. So they have to live somewhere. And then when interest rates go low, right, then there's lots of activity and people are moving and stuff. So I just love multifamily because it's very well protected in any type of economy.
Yeah, there's definitely opportunities regardless of what's going on in the world. I wanted to ask about putting yourself back in the W-2 world, because a lot of the listeners to this podcast are hardworking professionals. They either love their day job or they hate it, but they make good money. And they're thinking about, hey, maybe they're thinking about going down your route of, I want to exit my job in the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, whatever it is, because I want to generate some passive income, or they love what they do, but they want to just build generational wealth and things like that. What do you think is a good way to get started if they want to be a passive investor, right? They work 40, 50, 60 hours a week. They've got some cash that they want to deploy. What do you think is a good way to, like, A, evaluate somebody like yourself that raises money, right? Because they're not going to have the time to be as active and dig into the numbers. They're going to need to rely on, you know, people that they can know, like, and trust that have done their diligence, right? So maybe unpack that a little bit so a listener could start to think about, okay, if I want to take the 150, 250 grand they have in their bank account, what they can do with it and how they can evaluate people.
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, I think everyone's going to all start from the same place. Everyone's going to say, get yourself educated. Obviously, like, that's hugely important. You want to understand what you're investing in before you start having conversations about even doing it. So once you have that down, right? And again, it doesn't take long. There's tons of material out there that are very easily digestible. I mean, you could watch a YouTube video for like 20 minutes and understand what syndication's about as a general rule, right? So I would obviously start there and take a little bit of time to educate yourself on how it works. The next thing I would do is monitor. Don't be impatient, right? Like, start watching, go on social media and see what people are saying about syndications and see what type of operators that have your personality style. Because think about it, you're partnering with someone for 5 years, right? And you're giving them money and they're going to have full control over it. So you need to look from a personality standpoint. Is this person making good decisions? Do they seem like a responsible person? Those are the things. And what I would do is get a list of those. And then once you have a list of those people, find someone on LinkedIn who is a professional passive partner or passive investor, right?
Yep.
Find someone who has invested with these people before to do a double, triple check, right? You want to talk with other people that have had experiences working with a particular investor, and you will not believe what you will learn, because people are happy to talk about how their investments have performed, right? When you talk to them one-to-one. So reach out. If you know anyone at all in the space, maybe just one contact that you know that's doing syndications, ask them for referrals for the people that they know who are investing in syndications, right? Yep. And try to get like Rolodex of people, of operators and of other investors, other passive investors who have been in your shoes before and are scared to make their first investment. That's what I would do from the beginning. But honestly, follow your own guide as well, because sometimes you got to take other investors' guidance with a grain of salt, because they may misunderstand something or you just never know. So make sure you triangulate, make sure you ask 4 or 5 investors or at least 3 people what they think about a certain operator. And if 2 of them have great things to say, but then this other person has really vague ideas and says they don't like this person, they can probably discard that and do your own due diligence in that person's stead and have a conversation with the operator. So don't be afraid to talk and don't be too eager to jump into something. Don't overextend yourself.
Don't have FOMO. Real estate's a slow burn, right?
There is always deals in every economy, in every market. There's always a play. Even when there's a high interest rate environment, Justin, there are deals out there where you can buy great properties that have a fixed loan that you're assuming. So the previous buyer established the loan and the lender is willing to transfer the loan to the new buyer. So don't let the interest rates scare you or anything like that. Just listen to what the operator has to say and do your homework, right? Take the business plan, compare it, make sure that the person who puts the business plan together is reputable and actually executes on that business plan and has a good track record. That's pretty much, I guess, more than enough. Hopefully that helps the audience there.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of nuggets in there that somebody that's starting their journey or midway through it can definitely take away. I want to talk a little bit about the 3 degrees of freedom. You mentioned time, location, and obviously money. I've heard of like 3 levels of financial freedom. And I think about it more of like, okay, level one is like all my necessities are covered, right? Your housing expenses, your car expenses, et cetera. Level two is you're making the same money that you are right now. So you kind of live very comfortably. And then level three in my mind is the FU money. And that's the, I can do whatever I want. Maybe it's your 3 degrees. It's whatever I want, wherever I want, with whoever I want and all that stuff. So give us your 3 degrees and how you think about it and how other people can start to track and map out, okay, here are the ways that I can achieve these 3 things. And it sounds like you don't have to achieve them in succession or in a specific order, but they'll flesh themselves out.
No, great. Like, again, I'll try to keep this as quick as possible, but basically I'm trying to encourage people to not think about financial freedom as this giant mountain that you're going to get there one day in 50 years. Like, that's not how it goes. I think if you can focus on having a full-time job and getting yourself locationally independent so that you can live at least somewhat or mostly like the person that you would be if you were financially independent, that goes a long way, right? And you start seeing intangible things, like your mindset starts growing, you become more intentional about your life because you're taking your work life and you're compressing it into a part of your day, right? And eventually you start to think about, it's just natural that you're going to want to finish your work quicker because you're going to want to go out there and enjoy the environment that you're in. So location freedom to me is just being able to work and live anywhere, right? It's harder with people that have kids, but I've had guests on my podcast who have been doing it with kids with the help of like some other people, like an expat community type thing. So you do have that option. And then once you have the location freedom, or if that's your primary goal, then just pursue that, right? If you have a full-time job. The time freedom, that would be hiring a virtual assistant and building systems so that they can do things for you. And you can be creative here. Like, you can ask your virtual assistant to prepare a menu for you to take care of all the cooking. Like, if you have a specific dietary goal or something that you want to do, then they can Instacart those and have all the ingredients dropped off at your door, right?
Right.
Like they can do the research, they can do all that. They can also answer your emails for you if you train them up. They can manage your calendar. They can even run your portfolios or help you with your banking, like do your taxes, your books, stuff like that, right? But all that takes intention. And that's what you can do with time freedom. And then the financial freedom is what we encourage people to do, where eventually your passive income exceeds your expenses. We look for about 120% so that that way you can continue to invest passively with your passive income coming in. And so those are the three like layers of the onion, if you will. And whichever one is closest to you, whichever one is convenient and makes the most sense and you're aligned with is in your desire. Usually people start with location first and then go to time or financial. But hey, if you're looking for financial freedom first, right? And you're working a job and don't have any time freedom, that's one way to go. It's just that there's other ways, right? To be able to achieve a lifestyle that's closer to where you want to go way faster than you think, right? Like you could do it within a year. You could be locationally independent within a year if you set yourself up right.
Yeah.
So that's something that I encourage people to think about. And that gets you most of the lifestyle that you want with the location freedom. So I encourage people to start with that first.
Yeah. I think it's important to think through like, okay, if I had all three of those things, what would life look like? Right. And then say, okay, how do I back myself into achieving one of them or the other one, right? Because if you think about like, I want to be time, location, and financially free, it's such a big goal that it's like, okay, well, I need to be making passively 5, 10, 15, 20 grand a month. And if somebody's zero, that's a lot, right? Yeah. And so it's like, okay, how do I step by step this and say, okay, maybe in 5 years, I want to have all three. Okay, well, what do I need to do today, tomorrow, the next day, all that fun stuff.
So. Yeah, because most people just, they go straight for financial. Like they assume that financial freedom is all of that, right?
Yeah.
And that's not the case. You can break it up into being locationally free, right? And do that ASAP. And then your brain starts getting to work, like as you're enjoying all these incredible places, like you start getting a taste for that. And eventually you end up moving faster along your goal because you control your expenses, your mindset's shifting because you're able to complete your work quicker, right? Especially if you bring in a VA or have someone help you with your full-time work. There's just a lot of great benefits that you can get from sneak previewing the life that you're going to have in financial freedom ahead of time. So that's just something we suggest to people.
No, that's helpful. We've been talking for a while and I could probably peel back more onion slices here, but I want to end on a triple thread of questions, a three pack that I ask every guest. I kind of already know the third one, but we'll have the answer anyway. What's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
Yes. Believe it or not, it was trusting other people. Mm. I know that sounds really weird, right? But your network is truly your net worth. And back then, I still wanted to be a lone wolf. And even throughout like my single family investing career, that's what I lived by, right?
Yeah.
But you have to become a different person when you end up going into multifamily. That's just the way it is. You have to work with a team. And so when you do that, you have to open up and start trusting people. So I think that that mindset shift of trusting others is where it all starts.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I'm the same way. I wanted to do it all myself. And then you're like, wait. I started underwriting 100 unit deals. I'm like, oh, I don't have the capital or the track record. You know, I found one that worked, right? What am I going to do with it?
Me too. That's exactly. Yeah. 100%. Yeah,
no, makes sense. All right. So what's your favorite real estate or business book that you're reading or into right now?
Yeah. So right now, since we're traveling and we're in Japan, we haven't been reading too much, but some of our favorite books are the mindset ones, like The One Thing, it's universal, right?
Yeah.
Like that book is an amazing book and something I quite frankly need to read again. I love rereading some of the classic books.
Yeah.
Atomic Habits is great. But I think in terms of real estate, I would say The Millionaire Real Estate Investor is probably the best book that I've ever read. That's very comprehensive and covers mindset and also the execution and how you build your team and everything. So I would recommend those books for people who are starting out.
Got it. No, super helpful. All right. So third question, again, I think I know it, but we'll have you answer it. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off the income from real estate, what would you do? Because you're kind of already doing it now, it sounds like. So
yeah, that's what we're doing. I mean, we're able to enjoy this lifestyle now. I think a lot of it would be systematizing businesses, Justin, so that that way things run truly like I'm a CEO. So what I would love to be able to do is run a portfolio. And my job is to meet other people and bring them into our fund and bring them into our world and then have an operations person that I can say, yes, do this. No, don't do that. Right.
Right.
Two, and then not have to do anything else. Right. not taxes, not anything else. If you're truly in a business where you are just making decisions, then you're a CEO.
Yeah.
And all I want to do is to be able to make the decisions and have everyone else run with that. Right now, that's not the reality of things. I have to be in the weeds, right? And doing some work, right? But that's the goal, is to systematize the real estate business so that it's just like that, right?
Yeah.
And running really nicely for our investors and for us. So I can help my wife with her business or start up another one to help people with their time freedom.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal for me, is to continue to systematize and build out these processes and structures for people.
Awesome. Derek, this has been a wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate your time today on the podcast. How can people, if they want to reach out to you, obviously you've got your website and email and all that stuff there, but if there's anything else you want to share about how people can reach out and learn more about what it's like to live in Japan.
Sure. Yeah, I think the best way to reach me and to find out and get a free goodie of what we have going on is to learn about the five equities that my wife and I built up in order to escape our full-time job. And you can get that just by going to elevateequity.org/podcast gift, all one word. There you can pick up an ebook and it's interactive. Actually, you click on it and it will tally up and do some sums. And
oh, cool.
We spent a lot of time on it. It's pretty cool. And so I encourage people to go out there and take the assessment, see where you are, see if you're ready to start building wealth through real estate and getting yourself on the path of the 3 degrees of freedom.
Awesome. Derek, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
It's been amazing, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. All right. I hope everybody took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. So yeah.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.